Good morning. Welcome to the Good Lord webinar. If we haven't met, or if you're new to our webinar series, my name is William Reeve, and I'm your host for today. I'm a technology entrepreneur by background. I've founded, backed, or been a board member of a variety of tech businesses in the UK. And I'm currently, as well as chief exec of Good Lord, I'm a non-exec at Dunelm and Nutmeg. For those of you who don't know Good Lord, we're a technology company with an award-winning letting software platform that allows agents to manage the pre-tenancy process all in one place. We offer automated offer letters and contract generation. We offer a variety of ways of reducing agent admin. We help them increase revenue. We help them improve their customer experience. And most importantly, we help them remain compliant amidst the blizzard of regulations that seem to be hitting us these days. We've been working hard through the COVID pandemic to help agents adapt to the new normal, working from home, the new legislative processes, as well as completing any essential moves, whatever state the market's been in. And we're very lucky today to be joined by Robert Bolwell. He's here to help us answer any questions and guide us through the continuing impact of the legislation. Robert is a senior partner and head of landlord and tenant department at Dutton Gregory, one of the leading solicitors in the industry. And we're very lucky to have him here. And just before we get going, I've got a little bit of housekeeping. If you've got any questions during the webinar, please use the Q&A facility on Zoom. We'll try and answer them throughout the webinar on the relevant section or at the end of the webinar. Just before we kick off, we've been very grateful for those of you signing up for today's webinar, filling in a survey for us on the application form. And we've had over 500 responses for that. So it's been fascinating. And I'm just going to start with the responses for one of those, actually. If I can move on to the next slide. And this one was looking at what impact the latest lockdown 3.0 has had on your lettings businesses. I found it interesting because it's not all doom and gloom here. We've certainly got some agents reporting actually quite a positive impact, though vastly outweighed by people reporting a negative impact, obviously. But the other thing I found fascinating here is how the smaller agencies seem to be generally more resilient here, coping better with the impact of the lockdown. It's the larger agencies doing more than a few hundred tenancies a year or 30 a month, which are more likely to be reporting a negative impact. And in fact, about one in six of them are citing a major negative impact. So it's definitely not all fun out there. Amidst all that, the rules and regs are still changing. Courts are in a state of flux, and there's an awful lot to keep track of. So that's what we're here today for, really. I'm going to just kick off with our main section as we start to talk about the eviction process. So we're going to kick off with the eviction process, start talking about serving notices, new court processes, and then finally kind of what the new normal feels like. Robert, welcome. Thank you very much for joining us.
William, good morning. Thank you very much. I was thinking, actually, when I started logging on this morning, I'm going to have to update my profile picture. I mean, like a lot of people out there, I've got my lockdown beard, which my wife really doesn't like, but I've got it for the moment. And when we get back to what I call the proper normal, I might be able to visit a barber or a hairdresser and get some of it removed. But anyway, good morning, William. Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
Yes, it's been an extraordinary journey over the course of the last, 10, 11 months. So we'll try and talk through some of the key changes we've got to the eviction process and how it's actually impacting on landlords and, of course, agents right the way across the country. And I'll try and include Wales. I mean, sometimes we forget that, you know, we do have cousins on the other side of the River Severn who have got a completely different legal system now when it comes to the eviction process. There are similarities, but there are also significant differences. So where do you want to start? Shall I start with what happened back in March of last year, William?
Yes, I think that would be great, actually. And actually, then I think particularly kind of what we've been seeing more recently with the the latest lockdown.
Okay, well, if we go back to the original coronavirus legislation that hit the statute books towards the end of March with the first lockdown, some of you may recall that everything to do with our particular industry was found in Schedule 29 of the English version of the coronavirus legislation. Now, when I say, William, there are only 29 schedules altogether, you might think that our industry was a bit of an afterthought so far as Boris and his team was concerned, but there was an awful lot in there. But basically what they did overnight is they remove the ability to serve a two-week notice for, say, rent arrears under Section 8. They remove the ability to serve a two-month notice for Section 21, where you need your property back. All those notices literally overnight went to a three-month standard notice right the way across the board. Didn't apply to what I call tenancies where you've got a company tenancy. Didn't apply there. It applied to every other tenancy where you have an individual renting your property. Now, that was the first whammy, as it were, for the industry. Now, that situation continued right the way through to August. It was a bit different in Wales. In Wales, they went from a three-month to a six-month notice norm earlier in the summer. But in England, it went to a six-month notice norm, as it were, on the 29th of August. Now, it just so happened that happened to be the bank holiday weekend in August. So if you sort of logged off on your computer on the Thursday or the Friday, by the time you got back to the office on the Tuesday morning, we had these major changes. So that situation we have now, and that situation will continue right the way through to the 31st of March, when all the emergency legislation, both in England and Wales, will be looked at again by your respective governments or your devolved powers. Now, under the new norm, as you might call it, yes, a Section 21 notice has to be a minimum of 6 months duration. They have to change a few other bits and pieces along the way, because if you remember, one of the things that was brought into the English legislation by the Deregulation Act of 2015 was this requirement to issue proceedings on a Section 21 notice within 6 months of that notice being served. Well, of course, that makes no sense at all if your notice can't expire for 6 months. So they changed that. Now you have to issue on the basis of a Section 21 notice in England within 10 months of sending it out. But it's basically a six-month notice. With regard to default situations, I'm talking here about Section 8 notice, it's slightly different. It's 6 months is the norm. So if you have, say, 2 or 3 months rent arrears, yes, it is a six-month Section 8 notice. But there are a whole load of exceptions. The biggest and perhaps the most important exception for landlords, two or threefold. Number one, if you have suddenly found yourself in a situation with 6 months rent arrears, yeah, you can now serve a Section 8 notice, which can expire after only 4 weeks. So 6 months rent arrears, your Section 8 notice is not the six-month one, it's a four-week one. If you have got antisocial behaviour, yes, you can serve a much shorter notice. If you have nuisance, and remember, nuisance is it's a discretionary ground, but if you've got nuisance, you can actually serve a notice today and go to court tomorrow if the nuisance is bad enough. So there are all sorts of exceptions. Now, to try and get your head around this, one of the things the English government has done every time they've changed the rules on notices, they have published a new form. They published the new Section 21 or the Form 6A on the 29th of August, and they published a new Section 8 notice again on the 29th of August last year. And the great thing about the new Section 8 notice is it sets out there on the second page all of the time limits, and they link them to particular grounds upon which you or your landlord might be relying to get your property back. So don't spend lots of time searching the web trying to find out which time limit applies to which particular ground, field Section 8. Simply go to the government website, download what they call Form 3, or you and I might call a Section 8 notice, and all the time limits are there on one form, which makes it nice and easy. Now, everyone is saying, well, what's going to happen when we get to the 31st of March? What's going to happen when all this legislation, both in England and in Wales, is reviewed by our respective governments? At the moment, I have to say, we don't know. I mean, we keep referring to the new norm. It could well be that even after the 31st of March, the new notice provisions continue. In other words, it might still be 6 months for a Section 21 or 6 months for a Section 8 notice in most circumstances. We simply don't know. And in fairness to, you know, to governments on both sides of the River Severn, you know, this pandemic is twisting and turning every single week. So we don't know what's going to be with us in April, May, or even further into the year. What I would say, though, is in Wales, they've already introduced legislation to make the new Section 21 equivalent, call it a Section 173 notice. They've already introduced legislation to make a six-month notice in Wales the norm. Now, that legislation hasn't been passed as yet, but it does indicate that perhaps when we get to the 31st of March, at least in Wales, yeah, your Section 21 will continue to be a six-month document. In England, We know from what the government has said in the past that they want to look very closely at the whole Section 21 gambit. We know that in the Queen's speech to Parliament in December of 2019, she did reiterate that her government was committed to eventually getting rid of the whole Section 21 process. Now, I don't want to guess what might happen in 6 weeks' time, but bearing in mind we've got all this pressure in the background, I think members should be prepared to accept that, yeah, after 31st of March, at least with Section 21 notices, it might still be 6 months, as opposed to going back to the old two-month rule. At the moment, we just don't know. So watch this space. But obviously, you know, you'll be updated from time to time by your providers, and just watch this space. So that's all I was going to say with regard to serving notices. It is a changing scene. Change in Wales in March and England March last year. Changed again for Wales in the summer, changed again for England in August, and changed again possibly on the 31st of March this year, but watch this space. So that's what I was going to say, William, about serving notices. Is there anything you think I've missed?
No, I think that's pretty good. I've had a couple of questions here, which I think that's answered. So Hedl Shah was asking, does the six-month notice apply where the landlord just wants the property vacant, you know, never mind the kind of nuisance, et cetera, a sort of accelerant, but 6 month notice in a normal situation, I think from what you said, there's very
clear. Yeah, I'm afraid it does. I mean, it's tough on landlords. In many ways, landlords have suffered more in this pandemic than perhaps tenants have. I mean, we've seen a situation with rent arrears climbing, we've seen a situation with courts being closed down, the backlog of court cases. So yeah, this is just another instance, I'm afraid, of politicians deciding that for the public good, and I use the term advising for the public good, yeah, 6 month notice if you want your property back is effectively the new norm and probably will be after 31st of March, I'm guessing. Now, I mean, apart from the notice, I mean, I think it's your slide indicates, we also had quite a few changes in the court process. So if you're used to issuing a possession action in your local county court on a Monday morning, turning up in front of the judge, perhaps, I don't know, 6 weeks later and get your court order there and then, those days have gone. Last August, significant changes were introduced in the process. Now, those changes really were reflecting the sheer problem that the pandemic was leading to for all landlords and tenants. It also reflected the need for social distancing. It reflected the need to make sure that tenants got a fair hearing. So I just want to run through some of those changes. And they all came in effectively on the 3rd of August, 2020. So one of the new things you might have noticed if you've started court proceedings since then is your lawyer will say to you, well, we need a rent arrears statement. That's what we already put in with the court. But we need a rent statement now going back for literally 2 years, if that's how long the tenant's been in the property. Now, the courts have ordered this because they want judges to have a really clear picture as to how the tenant was behaving vis-a-vis his rental payments, both before, during, and hopefully eventually after the pandemic. So if you're going to court at all for a possession order, don't be surprised if the solicitor acting for your landlord says, no, I need a rent statement, not for the last 3 or 4 months, I need a rent statement for the last 2 years. So that was one of the big changes. Court has also directed that you need to file a statement when you issue your proceedings to indicate what effect the pandemic has had on your tenants, as far as you're aware. So if needs be, your lawyers will be asking you to let them have information about not just the rent arrears, but have you any information about your tenants being furloughed, which might explain the rent arrears? Do you know if your tenants have been isolating, self-isolating? Do you know if they've actually suffered from the virus, from the COVID-19? Now, all that information will go into a separate statement, which again accompanies all the papers into the court. So again, the idea is to give the judge who's going to decide the case eventually as full a picture of as possible how the pandemic has affected your tenants. Now, this doesn't mean you've got to go digging for information. We've all got GDPR issues, but you don't have to go digging for information. But if you've got that information on your file, if you've been sent an email or two over the last few months from a tenant explaining what effect the pandemic is having, that information has got to go. Now, apart from getting more information in front of the court, the court now is trying to not necessarily slow the process down, but give itself a bit of breathing space. Now, those of you who've been to court in the past, normal times, will know that typically a judge might deal with half a dozen, maybe a dozen cases in an hour. You turn up to court, you're in front of the judge, your case might last 5 minutes, and it's all over fairly quickly, unless the tenant wants to oppose what you're seeking. The problem with that process, as I described it, is with social distancing. If you have, say, 10 cases an hour in your normal court, and let's assume you've got an advocate for the landlord, you might go as the letting agent, you might have the tenant there, that's three people per case. Multiply that by 10, you could have 30 people milling around the court waiting area in any 1 hour period. And that's simply not acceptable. Courts can't cope with it. So what courts are now doing is listing cases more like half an hour apart. Yeah. So if you think about it, if you're doing 10 cases an hour in your normal times, you're now doing two cases an hour. And of course, that leads to certain problems. The problem is timing, it's backlog, it's delay. It's all those things you associate with slowing down the whole system. Now, in some ways, try and get over that. The courts are doing two things. Number one, they're opening more courtrooms in buildings which haven't seen a court in them maybe for 10 years. So I don't know if you're people taking part are in Portsmouth. So in Portsmouth, for example, they've now co-opted into the court system what it used to be a magistrate's court over in Avon. If you're in Winchester, for example, you've now got a court in what was called the Guildhall, which is a council building. So all of a sudden, you've got more venues which are dealing with outsourced cases than ever before to help clear the backlog. Of course, the big thing the courts are trying to do is deal with cases by telephone. Video links are few and far between. Video links tend to be for the more senior judges. Outsourced cases, county court, district judge level, a lot of them are now being dealt with by telephone. And that is working by and large. And that's one way the courts are trying to sort of speed up the whole throughput. One other issue that may come across your desk if you've got a problem tenant is what courts are calling review hearings. Try and save some cases going all the way to the bitter end and a telephone hearing or even a face-to-face hearing. Between the issue of your papers and that final hearing, a judge will literally review all the paperwork on that file. Now, the concept behind this, for a judge to say, well, I can see there's an issue here. I've read the COVID statement, the effect it's had on the tenants. I've seen the rent arrears history. I think there is a possibility here that this tenant, given time, might be able to clear the arrears by installments. Now, if the judge sees that in the paper, he is likely to pick up the telephone, quite literally pick up the telephone, speak to the advocate, maybe speak to the tenant, and see if he can bang heads together to avoid that case going the full distance. Now, I know William will probably say I'm a bit of a cynic, I've been doing it for far too long, but of all the cases going through my office, and I think we probably deal with 20 to 30 cases a week, I don't think we've seen one case where a judge has actually said, yeah, there's room for compromise here. And one of the reasons for that is by the time these cases get to court, get to a judge, probably gone too far.
Yeah,
I think if you've got a situation where you've got 2 or 3 months rent arrears, yeah, okay, fine. You can probably come to a compromise because no landlord wants to throw out a tenant and risk having a void if he can possibly help it. But of course, by the time a file gets to a solicitor's desk, it gets to a judge's desk, by and large, we're not talking 2 or 3 months rent arrears like we might have been talking about 2 years ago. Now we've got rent arrears that are literally 12, 13, 14 months. I think my personal highest rent arrears figure in the last couple of weeks was £85,000, which was 18 months.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was a situation where the landlord had every sympathy with the tenant, you know, full marks to the landlord for taking a caring approach. But of course, the longer a situation goes on, sometimes the deeper into the mire your tenant get, which means getting out of the mire, it's just virtually impossible. And, you know, I'm sure you'll see it, William. You know, you get to a point where there is no alternative. We have to get the property back. And the worst thing for a landlord is not only might be facing a void, you know, until we can get a new tenant in there, but how do you get back 18, 24 months rent arrears? It's impossible because tenant, by definition, is going to reserve what income he's got for his new landlord, his new property. So hopefully he doesn't get in that situation again. So it's the problem out there.
It's a hot topic at the moment. In fact, we've got some data coming up on it, but certainly protecting rent has been a sort of really growth area for the last 12 months, as everybody's been worrying about the risks that, you know, tenants through no fault of their own are facing in terms of losing income, et cetera. But actually, we've got a question here, Robert, from Stephen Chip, around this question of arrears. And actually, I'm building on your point here around the kind of court processes, how they've gone from, you know, 5 or 6 cases an hour to maybe two an hour. What about the bailiff side of things? Stephen's asking, are bailiffs actioning possession orders currently? Because he's got a tenant who's over 12 months in arrears, and Brighton Court has awarded a possession date, but the bailiffs will not enforce it.
Yeah, okay. You've got a few issues here. Number one, there were no bailiffs operating in the UK until the 21st of September. They then started working again, and within a couple of weeks, both the Welsh and English government said, no, we're going to have a temporary ban on evictions over the Christmas period. Well, you know, I can understand that. Believe it or not, we have had an informal halt to evictions over Christmas in the past. It goes back literally, you know, decades. But this time, the ban over Christmas has extended until about the 11th of January. And then new legislation came in on both sides of the River Severn to extend the ban even further. In England at the moment, there are no evictions, and I'll come to the exceptions. Generally speaking, there are no evictions until the 21st of February. And of course, on the 20th of February, which is a Saturday, I suspect Robert Jenrick, you know, in Westminster, will review the situation and the goalposts might move yet again. In Wales, as things stand at the moment, there are no evictions until the 31st of March, you know, that date when all the legislation is going to be reviewed. In Wales, though, what they're doing is they are reviewing the situation every 21 days. So between now and the 31st of March in Wales, there will be another review. I've got to be honest, William, I cannot see Wales changing position. So I think in Wales, with a few exceptions that I'll come to in a moment, there will be no evictions in Wales until after the 31st of March. Who knows what's going to happen come April? We just don't know. But let's go back to the exceptions. So in England, at the moment, no evictions until after the 21st of February. Now, the exceptions in England are, number one, you have 6 months rent or more. And number two, you have possession order, which is based on antisocial behaviour. You know, the nuisance, the conviction, that sort of stuff. But the problem is, you have to have either of those two elements written into your original possession order. So it's no good saying, when I was in court 3 months ago, I had 3 months rent arrears. Now I've got 6 months rent arrears, oh, I can do an eviction. No, it doesn't work like that. In England, you have to have had 6 months rent arrears at the time you got the order. Now, if it's not clear on the face of your order that when it was made, you had that 6 months rent arrears, because you've just got a figure, and that's usually what you get, you just get a figure. You're going to go back to the court, ask them to amend the order to actually make it clear that the monetary figure in the document is actually 6 months or more. And once you've got that, in theory, your bailiff in England should go ahead with the eviction. And again, if you've got antisocial behaviour, that should be written into the order. And again, if you've got that, well, once more, the bailiff in England should schedule that eviction.
That's pretty helpful. Yep. Certainly,
I have to say, I mean, we've got 3 or 4 of these at the moment where we are chasing and chasing and chasing bailiffs. It's almost like they're all going into hibernation. But there is that exception, and they need to be told. In Wales, it's slightly different. In Wales, the only exception is the antisocial behaviour thing. If you've got that written into your order, yes, in Wales, a bailiff should execute the warrant for you. Weirdly, Wales do not have an exception for rent arrears. So in Wales, you can have rent arrears of 36 months. No, you will not get eviction until after the 31st of March, as things stand at the moment.
Very helpful, yeah. So I'm just going to push on a bit. We've got a couple of questions coming up in the next section, so I think I'll turn to that. Just before we do that, I thought I'd just highlight one question I know has been on our mind, which is just how much has the actual physical pandemic been affecting this process? We asked our agents this, and just asked them how many of them had had issues where the tenants themselves been having to self-isolate or are sick. And as you can see, it's certainly a thing here. It's almost just over 20% of our agents have seen it, but it's by no means the majority of them. Most 3/4 of our agents haven't seen any delays caused by that. So the delays are all really to do with points you're making at the court processes and the legal notice requirements.
I mean, I would say, William, I think that is really quite hard. 79% of agents have not seen. I think it's remarkable. I thought it'd be far, far greater impact, but I think that's great. And I think it comes back to this basic point. A lot of people forget Across the country as a whole, in most normal times, the number of tenancies that go wrong that require a legal input from, you know, lawyers or barristers, it's still less than 1%. You know, it's normal. We all think about our problem files because they are the ones that take up our time. But the vast majority of your tenancies, your properties out there, are probably continuing fairly close to the norm, I'm guessing.
Yeah, no, and again, we've got some data on that just coming up in a moment, actually. But just in terms of serving notices, I think that we've got some questions around that area next. So a couple, actually, around kind of just wondering how this works in terms of, if you can't serve notice until 4 months have elapsed on the tenancy, but you've only got a six-month tenancy and you're supposed to give 6 months notice, how does that work?
I know. The numbers don't add up, do they? But you're absolutely right. I mean, England, I mean, forget Wales, but in England, yeah, the Deregulation Act said you can't serve your Section 21 notice until, you know, month four. So if you've got a six-month notice, or four plus six equals 10. I know. So a lot of agents ask us on the helpline, well, we're drawing up a new tenancy agreement going forward. Do we put in there, it's a six-month tenancy, do we put in there that it's going to be a two-month notice period? Well, I'm hoping at some stage we will get back to the norm where we were, you know, 12 months ago. But yeah, your questionnaire is correct. It doesn't add up. So yeah. The reality now, I'm afraid, is that if you're writing a six-month tenancy, you're going to say to your landlord, look, if the tenant goes in 6 months, great, fantastic. But you've got to be prepared that even with statutory notices, your tenant's going to be there for 10 months. And if we've got to go down the court process, well, gone are the days when you can get a court order on an accelerated application in 6 or 7 weeks. Now it's going to be more like 3 months. So if you think about it, a six-month tenancy, which is the point of the term, 6 months. It's over a year. Okay. And there's nothing we can do.
Well, but we've had a couple of people just saying they're finding it a bit difficult to hear you. The audio is cracking up a bit. So I don't know if you've got a headset or a microphone or something, but if so, it might help, I think.
See if I can find something in a second, yeah. Okay, look, sorry about that. I'm just trying to lean a bit closer to the laptop.
No, I think it's just something which a few of we've had a couple of people say that their audio is your audio is a bit of a problem, I think. Anyway, let's do what we can. I've got a question here around this Section 21 notice. If it does change in March, but it was just issued, what's going to happen? Is it going to have to be issued again?
Two things. A notice is valid on the day it's issued and remains valid. So if you issue a six-month notice in February, that won't run out, you know, 2 + 6 = 8, won't run out until August.
Yeah.
If we go back to the two-month mark, there is no reason why a landlord cannot write to a tenant and say, look, we are withdrawing the previous notice and here's your new one. We haven't seen that yet with Section 21s for obvious reasons. We've seen it a lot with Section 8 notices, where you're served a six-month Section 8 notice when you've got, say, 4 months rent arrears. You then hit the six-month mark, you serve a second Section 8 notice for 4 weeks, because you work it out, it's going to be a lot quicker to incur the cost of a second notice because you're going to court much, much sooner than if you wait for the first notice to expire. But there's no reason why you shouldn't do that.
Yeah, fair enough. Got another couple of questions along those lines of things changing. So if you send stuff to the court with no COVID statement, no sign of any COVID impact, and then later there is some COVID, there's a COVID statement that appears, or there's somebody has to, their circumstances change, can you send that to the court retrospectively?
Yeah, absolutely. No problems at all. I mean, rules don't say you have to keep the court updated. You simply have to file it when you issue proceedings. But I agree. If you know something has happened, in fairness to the court, in fairness to the tenant, you should update the court.
Yeah, fine. That was a question from Mike O'Neill. Another one here, actually, which is around the mediation process. I know that the sort of the pre-claims processes have been something which have been springing up. Certainly, we offer them with our rent protection policies, for example. If you're using a pre-claims process and that results in mediation and it fails and you say you need to take it through to court, will the fact that you've tried that mediation help the judge prioritise the case? This is a question from Alistair Philip Keddy.
No, it won't. I mean, the courts aren't that sophisticated. If you say we've tried mediation, it's failed, you will still have to go through the review hearing process. Now, it's always worth pointing out to the court what you have done to try and resolve matters. The judges sitting in England do have the ability to prioritise cases. I haven't come across a case where that's happened, except where the court has made a mistake. And to try and get the case back on track, the judges said, right, we're prioritising the final hearing. But it's interesting, have a go. But I don't think it'll save you much time at all in the long run.
Right. Thank you. And then I've got a question here around, I've got a question here. Which one am I going to go for next? Apologies. I've got quite a few questions actually around the sort of bailiffs process. So Sue Hughes-Thomas is just asking whether, I think in follow-up to the question I asked a few minutes ago around, with a possession order, do you have to wait for the bailiff if the tenant's not vacating the property?
If the tenant is still there, the answer is yes. I mean, you can talk, you can go, you can't harass, you can't change the locks, you can't send the local rugby team around, you've got to use due process. Now, that would mean either a county court bailiff, and the fee for him with the court is £121, it's cheap and cheerful, but we know there are problems with bailiffs, they've got backlogs, they've all gone into hibernation, but that's another issue. You can always go back to the county court and say, look, I would like to transfer this case to the High Court for enforcement. Now, if you're going to do that, the best time to do it is when you're in front of the judge for your actual possession hearing. Try and persuade the judge to give you permission. Have a fairly wide discretion. And, you know, certainly have a judge said yes, have a judge said no. I mean, there was one last month where I had a judge in Port Talbot, he said yes, no problems at all. In exactly the same circumstances, Judge in Portsmouth said, no, you can't. But if you transfer it to the High Court, a couple of things stem from that. Number one, it will be a quicker eviction process. And the reason it's quicker is the High Court enforcement officer, it is called, a private bailiff to you and me, is a private contractor. And like all private contractors, you pay them enough, they'll do it tomorrow morning. It's the High Court enforcement officer you see on, you know, sort of Channel 5's Can't Pay, Can't Stay, those sort of eviction programs on the telly. They are not county court bailiffs. They are High Court enforcement people. So they're quicker. The problem tends to be the cost. Depending on where you are in the country, depending on the number of people you might be evicting from a given property, a High Court enforcement officer will charge you more like £750 just for the eviction, as opposed to the county court bailiff charging £121. But I've got to stress, if you want to go down that route because it's quicker, it will cost, but you need to get the county court permission. And the best time to do that is say, when you're in front of the judge for your possession hearing. Otherwise, if you're not asked for it 3 weeks after you get your court order, you've got to go back for another hearing, another application, and another court fee to the county court, I'm afraid.
Yeah. We've got a couple of questions here around sort of trespassing in one form or another. One from Yash Kulasangram, who's saying that there's a permitted occupier, but who's never responsible for the rent. And there's a sibling brother who's been permitted to reside in the, who's never been permitted to reside in the property. And does that help evict them quick, faster? And another question, slightly more vivid, where the tenant's in arrears, but has gone to prison, and the flat is being occupied by the partner who's a druggie and not on the tenancy agreements. And what's the best course of action here?
Okay, well, first of all, if those people we're talking about, those occupiers, have been allowed into the property by the tenant or, you know, even by the landlord putting them on as a permitted occupier, they're not trespassers. They're not going to be squatters. You can't use the squatter action. Squatters, to you and me, tend to be people who have gone into someone's house with no permission from anybody. They are squatters. And, you know, one of the last things that David Cameron did before leaving office is, of course, he changed the law to make squatting a criminal offence. So in that situation where someone perhaps breaks into your property or goes through an open door, yeah, the police should arrest them and remove them. I'd say they don't, but that's what they should do in theory. For those people who have been let into the property, you will need a court order. And I can't say it's going to be a quicker process if you take proceedings simply against the people in there as opposed to people against the tenant. What I always say is, if the tenant wants to terminate the tenancy, wants to surrender, wants to walk away, he's going to give you vacant possession of the property. If he doesn't do that, in my book, that tenant is still on the hook for the rent arrears. And I know, you know, in one case, they may be in prison, but there's nothing to stop you issuing proceedings against the tenant. And if you get a possession order against the tenant, it takes effect against anybody. The tenant's allowed into the property, whether it's a sibling, whether it's another relative, or simply a lodger, it will be effective against everyone. So there, have a go against the tenant and make the tenant realise that until they sort the problem out, the rent clock is still ticking.
Yeah, very good. Let's have a look at, you were talking earlier about good reminder that, of course, the cases where tenancies go wrong are really very rare. But let's have a look at some of the data on that. Actually, if I can just move on to the next slide, we'll have a look at the arrears impact. So we asked everybody here what the impact of COVID has been on the arrears that they've seen. And a good number here, as you can see from these slides, a good number, about 40% of our agents are saying they actually haven't really noticed the difference here. More, again, another 40% are seeing an increase. But it's not a skyrocketing increase. Increase of less than half is what they told us, and less than 10% of the agents who filled in this survey are seeing them really increasing by more than half, really materially. So I know there's a lot of interest in these arrears figures, but it's not to your point. There are far more tenancies where there are no problems than there are where there are problems.
William, I would say the scariest figure there is that end one, that 12%. I don't know.
These are small agencies. They don't necessarily have the information at their fingertips, Robert.
Well, I mean, you think about it. Most of us, if we're agents, we get paid commission, and that commission comes out of the income which is generated via rents. So if we don't know what our rent arrears book is like, I always say I want to go back to school and do a bit of research. That's my worrying figure. But the rest of it, I think, is really quite good. I'm quite pleased with that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, we haven't necessarily had the accounts department filling in this survey, of course. So it may be that it's sort of somebody else's responsibility. But very good. Let's push on. We talk about the new court process. You've been talking about that a little bit already, but perhaps you can give us a feel for what you're expecting in the next 12 months in terms of the court process.
Well, it's interesting. These measures that were brought in last August were supposed to be temporary. And one of the things I haven't mentioned yet is what's called a reactivation notice. So you probably will remember that when we had the first lockdown at the end of March 2020, one of the things that came to a grinding halt was the court process. It wasn't all courts. Most criminal courts kept going. Courts dealing with matrimonial issues, childcare matters, they kept going. It was landlord and tenant, our sort of area, that will take worse when the courts closed at the end of March and didn't reopen until the 21st of September. Now, any case that was in the court process during that window, March right the way through to the 21st of September, was effectively put on hold by the court itself. Now, to get that case kick-started, you had to file what was called a reactivation notice. Sounds very dramatic, but it's a bit of paper, a reactivation notice. And that notice was designed to tell the courts what had happened during the lockdown period, whether rent rates got worse, whatever, and also deal with a couple of COVID issues. Now, the deadline for filing your reactivation notice was the 29th of January this year. And interestingly, the legislation about this COVID notice, this separate notice, that was going to run until the 31st of March. Now, a couple of weeks ago, courts extended the deadline for those two bits of paper. You can now serve a reactivation notice all the way through to the end of April. But more worryingly, you can serve your COVID notice, your starting proceeding, your COVID notice will continue to be applicable right the way through to the 30th of July. Now, that, to my mind, would indicate that the courts aren't seeing any quick end to the otherwise temporary measures that were introduced last August. So if we are now assuming that COVID notices are going to be filed on all proceedings up to those issued in July of this year, I think it just tells us that nothing is going to change. These temporary measures will continue. We'll probably continue to have review hearings for at least until the end of this year, or until the government says the pandemic is over. And I'm afraid at the moment, there is absolutely no sign of that, no sign at all.
No, very good. I've got a couple of questions just coming in the last 2 minutes, actually. One of them is, it's another one of these ones around, in fact, actually, I've got a couple here around what happens when when the dates, when it's a bit like your point, I think, about the maths not adding up, but when the dates start to kind of go beyond the end of the term, fixed term, or for example, actually Chris Perring's asked, he's issued a Section 21, giving 6 months notice, but actually he's happy for the tenant to stay 7 months to the end of September, happy, you know, wants to be as flexible as possible for the tenant. Is that Section 21 still valid, or does it have to stick to the 6 months notice?
Yes, it is, and yes, no, it isn't. You've got to be very careful with notices because, in that particular case, your notice is going to run out in September. Okay, it runs out in September. If the tenant then says, "Well, can I stay beyond that?" What do you say? You must not do anything which would imply that your notice is being unilaterally withdrawn by the landlord. If you say, for example, "Yes, you can stay, no problems at all," and that's all you say, courts have interpreted that as cancelling your notice. What we would tend to say in a situation like that to the tenant is, well, we are not prepared to withdraw the notice, so they know exactly where they stand, but your landlord will delay issuing proceedings for another month. Now, if you put it in those terms, it's crystal clear your notice is not being cancelled. It's crystal clear you're giving a breathing space of a month to your tenant. I don't think any court would interpret that sort of wording as the landlord changing his mind about wanting his property back. If you, though, simply say, come September in Chris's case, if you simply say, "Yes, you can stay for another month," well, the implication is by saying that you are cancelling your Section 21. And if come October, in your case, you issue proceedings, a judge might say, "Sorry, you no longer have a valid Section 21. It's a bit like Monopoly, go back to go, don't start all over again, and off you go." The problem we've got is these sort of cases are usually dealt with by district or deputy district judges. And they are not, well, their decisions aren't binding on other courts. So you could have two different judges sitting in the same court coming to a different conclusion. Courts of record in this country are things like High Court, the Court of Appeal, you know, the Supreme Court. Those courts, they make laws which are then binding on other courts below them. What one district judge does in, I don't know, say Winchester, may not be the same as a district judge does in Leeds. They all can operate in slightly different ways. So just be ultra cautious. And bear in mind, the old adage is tenants are always right, landlords are always wrong. Especially during this pandemic, we've seen the way central government behaves towards landlords and tenants. Judges do tend to favour tenants, and if they can, they will allow a tenant to stay in the property. So just be very careful if you do get that request for more time after the Section 21 notice expires.
That's really helpful. Question from Chloe Darcy around, okay, once the, as the court process sort of evolves and the bailiffs get back to work more, what's the sign that possession orders will be prioritised? Or actually, she's particularly asking, will possession orders from prior to COVID be prioritised, do you think, when the bailiffs get back to full strength?
No, I think that's one wrong way of looking at it. The way bailiffs operate is with a diary. So the idea is when you get a court order coming through, you get a warrant on your desk if you're the bailiff, you put the first warrant you get in the earliest slot in your diary. So if you think about it logically, if I have already applied for an eviction back in December and I'm applying for an eviction tomorrow, the warrant I applied for in December should be dealt with before the one I'm issuing tomorrow. So what I would say to all landlords out there is if you've got a possession order today, even though we know in most cases the bailiff will not be able to do anything with that warrant tomorrow, it's probably worth filing your warrant request now rather than waiting until after the 21st of February, because after the 21st of February, other people will have filed their warrants during that interim period. So although the expense is not to be sneezed at, if you've got a possession order which is kicking in, if you know you're going to need a bailiff at some stage because, you know, rent arrears or the tenant wants local authority accommodation, don't wait until bailiffs are operating. Issue the warrant now because bailiffs should simply take them in the order in which they were issued in the first place.
Okay. And actually, sorry, that point you made a moment ago, actually, I just had a request to, if you could just repeat the wording around permitting tenants to stay for an extra month without sort of without retracting your notice.
Yeah, well, if I go slowly, I mean, I can imagine, you know, sort of 300 or 400 people might be scribbling this down, but I'll get fairly slow. So, you know, dear Mr. Penn, thank you for your request, saying the property, blah, blah, blah. Your landlord is not prepared to withdraw or cancel the Section 21 notice, which was sent to you previously. First bit, make clear we're not going to cancel it. However, in deference to your request, the landlord has instructed us not to issue court proceedings until after, and then you put the new date in, 1 month, 2 months, or whatever. So you're making it absolutely crystal clear that you're not withdrawing that notice. Now, having said all that, bear in mind what I said 10 minutes ago. Under the emergency legislation, you've only got 10 months to issue proceedings on your Section 21 from the date you first sent it out. So if you have a tenant saying, I'd like an extension of 1 month, yes, that wording worked absolutely fine. If you have a tenant who wants an extension of 2 months, again, absolutely fine. By the time you get a tenant saying, I'd like a 3 month extension, well, the window you've then got to issue proceedings before the law invalidates your Section 21 is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And clearly, if a tenant says, I'd like an extension of 4 months, well, it doesn't take a genius to work out that 6 + 4 = 10. If you give them that 4 month extension, you're shooting yourself in the foot and you'd have to serve a new Section 21 notice anyway. So those are the key things. Number one, not withdrawing the first notice. But number two, remembering that window to get things issued once your Section 21 notice expires in the first place.
Perfect, yeah. Good. And I've got a bit of a split jury from the comments I'm getting here. Some people can hear you fine, but a couple of people are still struggling a bit. So just for those of you who haven't, I think if I try and summarise that, I think it's, you know, it's a letter to the tenants along the lines of the landlord is not prepared to retract or change the notice. However, he has instructed us not to serve court proceedings until such and such a date after the extension that he's happy with. But be mindful of the 10-month maximum that you've got to serve proceedings under the emergency legislation. I think I got that right, Robert.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can hear you fine, for what it's worth. Very good. Quite a technical one, but I'm sort of curious about it. And it's from somebody who's been using you recently, I think, Ashley Chapman Kelly, talking about the current 6A form on the government website, where there's a form missing, if I've understood this correctly, around the landlord name and address, section 4. And you've apparently suggested that there's potentially a loophole here which the judge could use to throw out cases here. Do you want to elaborate a bit more on that?
Yeah, okay. Now, I mean, this only applies to England because in Wales, those of you in Wales, you'll know you do not have technically a prescribed form for section 21. But in England, we do. It's called form 6A, and again, it was changed last August by the government when they introduced a 6 month service rule for section 21s. Now, I know you can visualize the form, but the first page is a whole load of notes. Second page is you fill in details of the property, the tenant's name, the address, etc., etc. But on the last page, there is paragraph 4. Paragraph 4 says name and address of landlord. The problem is, on the published version, the gap to put that information on is incredibly small. It really is incredibly small. What you have to do is either type, you know, with sort of a very small font, or you turn that form into a Word document, make the space bigger, and tap in the information. But technically, a prescribed form means that you've got to fill in every single blank on the document. And if you miss out one of those blanks, miss out one of those boxes, yes, a judge can turn around and say, well, you've not completed the form correctly. Therefore, that form is not valid. Goodbye. And, you know, we're having this quite a lot because people look at paragraph 4, name and address of the landlord. It's so small, they ignore it. Well, if it says name and address of the landlord, you have to put name and address of the landlord in there. Now, sometimes you can get away with that error if it's quite clear from the rest of the information on the form who the landlord is and where the landlord lives. And, of course, that might be on the form, it might be on a covering letter. But if you think about it, most Section 21s aren't actually signed by the landlord. Down the bottom, it's got the name and address of the person signing it. And usually that's you or me, that's the agent. So of course, if on the bottom of the form, you still haven't given the landlord's details, you've simply got your name as the agent, your signature, then technically speaking, nowhere on the form have you put the identity of the landlord, which is weird when you think about it. If you go back to the Section 8 notice, and again, that's prescribed form on both sides of the River Severn, Section 8 notice is absolutely clear. You've got to put the landlord's name and address. And think about that when you do your Section 21s. The two forms are similar in a way, but you need to put the landlord's name and address on there. Now, again, some judges will make the order no matter what. Some judges won't. And, you know, it's when we have district judges, they will do one thing in one part of the country, another in another. But when you think about the cost of getting it wrong, if you go to court and, you know, my favourite charity, Shelter, turns up representing the tenant, they will go to town. And if they can get the case thrown out, so that's your first problem, case thrown out, you've just lost the last 6 months. Then, of course, in English law, we have this idea of winner takes all. So you could find yourself having to pick up Shelter's barrister's bill, and that's never cheap. I can tell you that's never cheap.
No. Fine. Well, I'm conscious of time, and I want to just get on to the outlook for what's next. But before we do that, I thought I'd just share, I know there's a, you know, we've been talking about how things can get delayed from the medical side, the tenants getting sick. We've talked about the court processes. We've talked about the eviction processes. All of these things just serve to lengthen the length of time it takes to get possession back. And we asked our respondents here, again, over 500 of them, what is the longest that anybody's seen it take? And I was interested here to see, you know, we've got, again, almost half the people didn't answer this. So again, probably not the people actually directly handling this, or to your point, kind of really haven't, these problem cases are sufficiently rare, they haven't noticed it. But you can see where I think it would have been pretty routine to get stuff back in less than 6 months before the pandemic. We've now got people reporting as long as 12 to 14 or even longer. Rare that it's longer than that still, thankfully. But, you know, I think you can really see the impact of all these changes on this survey graph. Right, I'm going to move on. Let's have a look at the sort of talk a bit more about the outlook. Actually, I'll just start here, I think, with another survey graph, which is just actually we were asking people whether they were expecting their landlords to be giving up and leaving the market from here. And I think it's reassuring, I think, to see, you know, almost half of our agents are not expecting that. There are some who expect a small number of landlords to leave, and 11% thinking as many as 10% or more of the landlords could be leaving the market. So there is going to be some impact, I think, from landlords leaving, but people here are not expecting a tidal wave to be flooding out. In terms of more general optimism, just before I turn to questions, I'm just going to finish on that slide, which is kind of what's people's outlook, and we're actually seeing a fairly optimistic outlook here. We've got over half of our agents feeling optimistic, 44% of them somewhat optimistic, and only about 15% feeling somewhat pessimistic. So definitely feels like the sunny uplands ahead. But in terms of how you're looking at it, I mean, the immediate piece of the outlook, I think, Robert, it's fair to say, is the EICR regs kicking off in April, right? Do you want to just tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, we've got lots of things on the horizon. I mean, 1st of April, if you're in England, the electrical safety certificates become mandatory for all properties. And you remember last year we had a situation where if you were renting out a property from the 1st of June, new tenancies had to have an electrical safety certificate. It's now going to be applied to all properties in England from the 1st of April. Wales, they're so much more civilized in Wales. They don't have any statutory requirement for this. It's a recommendation from RentSmart Wales, but it's not mandatory. So we've got that coming on the 1st of April. A bit further ahead, in May, you may have read about it, that England and Wales will have legislation introducing a breathing space for debtors, whatever sort of debtor you are, when it comes to trying to service their debts. That will apply to tenants in rent arrears, so that's on the horizon for May. And then further ahead, of course, we've got at least two private members' bills that are stalled in the Commons, but also a government white paper on increasing energy efficiency levels in domestic properties. At the moment, of course, it's E. And I think, you know, hopefully we're all at E for the properties in our portfolios. But they're talking about increasing the rating to C on residential properties in the course of the next 3 or 4 years. I think that's a bit optimistic, but these are things on the horizon. And, you know, for those landlords who are wondering where to exit the market, well, just watch the next budget, because I think we'll see CGT increasing, you know, which might nudge up slightly the number of landlords who are reconsidering their position. But generally speaking, look at the demographics of our country. You know, look at the young people who are coming through who will not be able to buy property in the near future. So I tend to agree with that last bar chart. I think the future is really good for our industry. Yes, there may be problems with energy efficiency. Yes, we've got all sorts of regulations on the horizon. But I think generally speaking, if you want to take a long-term view, our industry is here and it's going to be really well over the next 10 years.
Actually, that's a great lead up to what I think is going to be my last question, which is, you're just talking about the optimism you have here. What are the sort of top positives, you think, Robert, in your mind, that are going to come from the pandemic in terms of the impact on the lettings industry?
I think that the push the government has been making quietly in the background for longer tenancies will be with us. I mean, in Wales, they've got legislation on the horizon which will make tenancies effectively a minimum of 12 months. And I think that's going to happen. I think we'll have more people wanting to rent. I think that the squeeze on the landlords will continue. So margins for landlords will probably be reduced. And I think sooner or later, the government here will say, no, 6 months is not the norm. It should be 12 months or even longer, unless the tenant wants out with break clauses. So that's the way I see it going.
Right. Good. Well, thank you very much, Robert. I'm just going to wrap up with a couple more slides. So the final bit of data we're sharing here is actually one on our website every day. We update our snapshot of lettings activity in England and Wales daily. And we're still seeing what this graph shows. The blue graph is the number of new applications. And the kind of horizontal line of that, the axis, is what we think is the baseline, which is 2019. And we're still seeing new applications tracking significantly below the 2019 levels. This is normalizing for a typical agent, but we are seeing the lets completed running slightly ahead of the 2019 level. So we're sort of almost back to normal based on current numbers, but materially, a little bit different on those starting the new applications that are just going through since the beginning of the year. For those of you who found this content helpful, there's a lot more of it on our website at goodlaw.co/newsagent. We have a bunch of news webinars, ebooks, data, etc., available on that. It's all updated daily. And if you'd like to speak to us at all, you feel free to book a call. There's a website link where you can just book an appointment to talk to one of our team on goodlaw.co/book a call. But I hope you found this last hour helpful. Robert, I want to thank you very, very much for shedding all your insight and experience on what you're seeing in the market and the outlook going forward. And it's good to hear how positive you are in terms of what you're expecting for the outlook over the next few months, as hopefully we get into the sunlit uplands. Thank you once again, Robert, and very much hope everybody who's been joining has found this helpful, and wish you all the very best.